Hey, it's Andrew, the Director of Literary Arts. Here at Literary Arts, we rely on our community, people like you, for support. To help make this podcast and all our programming possible, give today, literary-arts.org/donate. Welcome to Long Distance from the Archive Project. I'm Andrew Proctor, Executive Director of Literary Arts. The Archive Project is a retrospective of some of the most engaging talks from the world's best writers from more than 35 years of literary arts in Portland. And this is Long Distance, a podcast-only series of conversations with great contemporary writers about their new books. Here's your host for the podcast, Amanda Bullock, the Director of Public Programs for Literary Arts.
Hi, I'm Amanda Bullock. For this episode of Long Distance, I spoke to Emma Straub about her wonderful new novel, All Adults Here, an instant New York Times bestseller. Emma is also the author of the novels Modern Lovers, The Vacationers, Laura Lamont's Life in Pictures, and the story collection Other People We Married. She owns, with her husband Mike, Brooklyn's Books Are Magic bookstore. Emma excels at writing enjoyable, funny stories that also pack a real gut punch. All Adults Here is a wonderfully character-driven, multi-generational story centered on that eternally fascinating literary subject, families. What we do and don't inherit, and how we hurt the people we love the most. This book gives you LOL-worthy zingers galore while engaging with some big questions around time and aging. When is it too late, if ever, to change your own life? How far back do you have to go to which decision? And it would all be different. How are we always the same person and constantly new, holding all of those selves inside of us at any one time? Emma called me from her bookstore in Brooklyn on a Saturday morning, and we talked about world building in realist fiction, carrying around multiple selves, how the literature of this moment is reckoning with politics, and how weird time is, especially now. Take a listen to my conversation with Emma Straub. Hi, Emma. Thank you so much for being here. It's good to see you.
It's good to see you too, Amanda. I miss you. I miss humans.
Me too, actually. I like think of myself as kind of a curmudgeon, but I actually do miss people.
Yeah. I mean, like right now, I am talking to you from the office at Books Are Magic. And my favorite thing about being here is that we're doing pickups now where we have this little, like these little windows where people pick up their books and I just like stick my face in them and talk to everybody. And I don't know if I frighten them or if they enjoy
it. It's a little like, here's
Johnny.
I'm
like, hello. It is a little, here's Johnny. It's like, here's Emma. Like, I don't want to talk to them about their books even. Like, I'm just like, I just am so starved for human interaction that I feel like I'm a little much right now, but what can you do?
I mean, not much. I feel like I never thought of myself as really a gossip, but I feel very like starved for gossip, but not the Twitter kind. Like I'm staying far away from that. But anytime I see someone, I'm like, what have you heard? What do you know? What is like anything about anybody else that's not the people that I live with?
Just any information about anything.
Which is one of the reasons this book, All Adults Here, is so enjoyable. You get to spend some time with these other people.
Other people, a whole family that isn't yours. Like, so you can enjoy their problems.
It was great. I really enjoyed that. Yeah. So I thought maybe we would start with a short reading so that we can be introduced to these people in these book, this
yes.
book.
Yes, sure.
And if you want to just tell us, I always feel kind of weird like asking the author to tell me what the book's about, but if you could tell us what All Adults Here is about to you.
I can. I can.
Great.
Well, first I'll tell you what I thought it was about, which was about cheese. I was like, I'm going to write this hilarious cheese book that's like a cheese romance. Like in my head when I started, I was like, I want to write like the Gilmore Girls, but like I had this like super goofy, rompy idea. And then I started writing and I was like, oh my God, wait, no, it's all about like parental mistakes and like all of the like horrible, sad feelings that we hold on to for decades. Like, that's not fun, but it is. It can be fun too. I mean, really, the book is about families and how we often fail the people we love the most in ways that we don't even understand. And hopefully with time, we can work to, you know, sort of reverse some of those hurts. That's what it's about. I mean, it's about family. It's about love. It's about adult siblings and being a parent. I mean, I think that I had children the last two times I published books, but when The Vacationers came out, River, my oldest, was 9 months old. And so I didn't know anything for sure. And then when Modern Lovers came out, River was two and Miles was 3 months. So not only did I still not really know anything, but I was just like upside down and backwards and had no idea what day or time it was. And but this time my kids are 4 and 6 and I feel slightly more like I've absorbed what it means to be a parent. We'll see. I don't know.
Yeah.
I can read from the beginning of the book. Should we do that?
That would be great.
So you don't have to know anything, obviously, because it's the very beginning. But I will say someone dies in the first sentence, and I think it's funny. Okay. Chapter 1. Astrid Strick had never liked Barbara Baker, not for a single day of their 40-year acquaintance, but when Barbara was hit and killed by the empty, speeding school bus at the intersection of Main and Morrison Street on the eastern side of the town roundabout, Astrid knew that her life had changed, the shock of which was indistinguishable from relief. It was already a busy day. She'd spent the morning in the garden, she had a haircut appointment at 11:30, and then her granddaughter, Cecilia, was arriving by train, with 2 suitcases and 0 parents, no school bus accidents there, just a needed escape hatch, and Astrid was to meet her at the Clapham station to bring her back to the big house. The bus hit Barbara just after 11. Astrid was sitting in her parked car on the inner lane of the roundabout, the verdant circle at the center of town, adjusting her hair in the mirror. It was always the way, wasn't it, that one's hair looked best on the day of a scheduled trim. She didn't wash her hair at home unless they'd gone to the beach or had been swimming in chlorinated water or some foreign substance, paint, glue, was accidentally lobbed in her direction. No, Bertie Gonzalez washed Astrid's hair every Monday and had done so for 5 years, before which it had been washed by Nancy at the same salon, Sheer Beauty, which was located on the southeastern side of the roundabout in the quarter circle between the Clapham Credit Union and Susan's Bookshop, kitty corner from Spiro's Pancake House if you peered through the open sides of the white wooden gazebo at the grassy island center. The professional hair washing was a relic from her mother's generation and an affectation that her own mother had not possessed, and yet there it was. It was not a pricey indulgence if weighed against the cost of a proper conditioner. On every 8th Monday, Bertie also gave Astrid a trim. Nancy had given slightly better haircuts, but Bertie was better with the shampoo, and Astrid had never been vain, only practical. Anyway, Nancy had retired, and Astrid hadn't missed her. Bertie was from Texas, and her parents were from Mexico, and Astrid thought of her as human sunshine, bright, warm, sometimes harsh, but always good for one's mood. I'll stop there.
Thank you. First of all, the idea of having someone else wash my hair is almost made me cry.
Yeah.
but second, I'm really glad you read that part because it sets up the town and so specifically. And I really wanted to talk to you about world building, which I feel like is a phrase usually used for like sci-fi and fantasy. Although I guess this book is kind of fantastical.
Now it is.
Yeah. But the town is so specific and, you know, all the businesses are named and she's on the inner side of this side of the roundabout. And I was curious if you could kind of talk about the world building of all adults here.
Yeah. Well, I guess, you know, so another thing that this book is about is community and a small community, the kind of place where everybody knows everyone. And that's where I live too. You know, I mean, it looks a little bit different, I guess, because it's within a big city, obviously, here in Brooklyn. But, you know, to me, like, this book is a lot about how it feels to be an adult person in the same place where you were a teenage person and a child, and to have to sort of navigate how you change and evolve as you grow while understanding that you are fixed at various points in the minds of the people who surround you, who you see all day long every day. And that there's a certain kind of performance that goes along with that, and comfort and irritation, you know, that it's a complicated way to go through life. And I often think to myself, like, oh, right, this is why people move somewhere else. Like, this is why not everyone stays in the town where they grew up, right? Because it would be too hard or too incongruous to constantly be reminded of the person who they'd been, or the person who they'd been pretending to be, or whatever it is. But, you know, I wanted to make this town as specific as possible to hopefully get across the feeling that all of these people have of just like how well they know this place, and that it's not just some, you know, quaint bucolic town to them, right? It's their home, which is how I feel about Brooklyn, only with, you know, not as many trees.
Fewer gazebos.
Yeah. I almost no gazebos.
Did you have fun with the names too? Did you have any, like,
oh, I loved it so much.
Business names on the cutting room floor.
I mean, like, that has always been my favorite thing. Like, when I wrote Laura Lamont's Life in Pictures, which is my first novel, like, genuinely, I had the most fun coming up with the fake movies inside that book, like, that had nothing to do with the plot and, like, didn't matter at all. But, like, that was my favorite part.
You guys, I remember there were posters.
Oh,
right?
Yes. Oh, yes. We have posters. I have two of them hanging in my bathroom at home. I love that stuff. I love that stuff. I feel like that's the, like, you know, the, it's not even the icing on the cake of being a novelist. It's like the sprinkles on top of the icing on top of the cake. Like, when it's like, it's totally inconsequential, but so much fun. Like, how lucky am I that that's part of my job, to like call the salon sheer beauty? Like, that makes me happy.
It is. I don't know. I think it is consequential because it is a choice. It does make it specific, and it does paint a certain kind of picture. And it's not necessarily like it's right or wrong, but like, there are books where the narrator is never named, you know, that's a different mood.
Right. Yes, it is. Yeah. No, I mean, I guess I mean inconsequential to the plot, you know, or whatever, like, it's not, but yeah, no, it certainly contributes to the feeling of reading the book. And I, you know, I am like a more is more sort of a person in general. And so I love that stuff, you know, like, it's how I am in life too, where like, if there's like, I want the information, I want all of the information, even though I'm a disorganized mess, I want to know it all in order to understand any of it, which makes this moment challenging.
That's true. That's been hard. But that means, I feel like you have a perfect job for someone who wants to know it all, because you get to, did you do any research for this book? Or
I read some books about goat cheese and that sort of thing. But that was it. You know, everything else was character, you know.
You're a person.
I'm a person.
That's your research.
And part of a family. And, you know, I observe family.
You mentioned the goat cheese research, which I appreciate, and I also do that, but it's just eating goat cheese.
Yeah. Well, I had to do that too. I mean, it was hard, but you know, sometimes you have to make sacrifices for your art.
So you mentioned Gilmore Girls and goat cheese research, but I was wondering if there were other books or other art, like in addition to Gilmore Girls, that you kind of see in conversation with this book? Because it is part of this, you know, it's about small towns and it's about multi-generational and how you kind of see that.
Yeah. I mean, I think that like, it's my favorite kind of book is that, let's check in over here. Let's check in over there. Like every time I try to write a book that is not like that, it ends up that way anyway. Like this book, I tried to make it much more streamlined. But then I just kept being interested in other characters and they just kept showing up again. And I was like, what am I, you know, you can't ignore them. That's very rude. Yeah, I mean, not to give you like a totally ridiculous answer, but I feel like it's Middlemarch. Like Middlemarch is probably my favorite novel. My mom is just rereading it and sometimes she's texts me and is like, Dorothea, poor Dorothea, you know.
My sister read it recently and was doing the same thing.
It's so good. It's so good. But it's like, I mean, for me, it's like the platonic ideal of that book where you really, really are deep in all of these different corners and rooms in this town. And you when you leave it, you have this immense understanding, not just of Dorothea, although of her, of course, but that you understand sort of the whole ecosystem and that, you know, I wanted that sort of thing, but for the family, you know, that like I mean, maybe someday I'll write a 600 page book, you know, but not yet. Although this is my longest, it's my longest book, I think. Yeah, I would say that is the book that I love the most, that I feel like my book, like, you know, could be like a great, 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 great grand niece of. Like, it's not like I was, Middlemarch is not this book's mother, you know, like it's not that close, but that is the book that I think like exists the most inside my brain. Like it's one of the books that I think about the most, just in terms of like how to go in and out of people's heads and still have things happening, you know, like where it's not just interior, but sort of dipping in and out and what fun that is. I mean, that is just, oh God, I love
that. Yeah, don't stop. It's a pleasure to read. It is, it's really funny also. Like you're very funny. It's great. I LOL'd.
Oh, good.
Several times. But it is like the summary you gave. I know, I do think it's a great summer read and it's a great beach read, but it also really like gets you in the gut and gets you in the heart. And you're sneaky like that, I think, in a way that I really appreciate.
Yeah. I mean, thank you. Thank you. It's funny, like I almost don't know which way, I guess it's better to be sneaky that way than sneaky the other way. But I feel like that's what I love that about books, you know, like where you pick something up because you think it's a certain tone or a certain kind of novel. But then as you're reading, you realize, oh, wait, this is also this also really falls into this other category. And that those two things can coexist. You know, I think that like for me, humor is necessary. And like, I think that, not to make this whole talk about Laura Lamont, Amanda, because that would be weird, but to bring it up again.
I mean, I have it right here.
I know, that's why. And the hardcover, you are one of like 14 people who own that book, Amanda. But the thing about Laura Lamont is that like my story collection has lots of funny stories and funny things in it. But Laura Lamont, like I was like, I'm writing a novel. I can be a novelist. I'm going to be a novelist. I was so focused on this project of it, which was like, you know, which had so much research and so, and it was so outside of my own experience that like, and in a space where humor played a really small part, like there are funny things in it, but it's not at all. Like, I don't think anyone would describe it as a funny book, but when I wrote The Vacationers, like, I felt like I figured out who I was as a novelist, or who I like really was supposed to be as a novelist, because it was in my voice and it was my world. And that included humor, and that, like, I'm not saying that writing is easy or should be easy, because it is not, obviously. I mean, you know, I know you have one of these in your house, and like, it's not, you know, it's not an easy job. But I think that what, something that I figured out, at least for me, is that like, when the writing itself is closer to your own voice, then you're able to like, I don't know, to just like get in deeper. And for me, humor is often how I deal with like uncomfortable situations or sad situations. Like, my dad was in the hospital recently, and for not COVID related things, but was in the hospital. And, you know, every time I talk to him, we're just laughing and trying to make each other laugh. And it's not funny, but it's how we deal with it. And so once I figured out that like my novels could do that too, I think they got a lot better. And that I slipped into like my natural rhythms and my natural gear, which just makes it easier to sort of plumb whatever depths I want to plumb. Yeah. And so I think that people probably pick it up being like, oh, it's yellow. It's got to be fun. And it is yellow and it is fun. But I think that, yeah, I mean, it's full of real, real stuff. You know, I mean, if you paid attention to my, you know, Goodreads or reviews, which I don't look at very often, but occasionally.
I was like, no, Emma. No.
I mean, I just occasionally peek. And one of them, the first line, it was like one line. It was like a 1-star review. And it was like, this book celebrates gay marriage and cursing. And I was like, yeah, yep, both. But, you know, I think that it's some, you know, reviews have talked about like all of the stuff in it. Like that there's a lot of like, there are a lot of, you know, contemporary issues. And like, to me, it's like, oh, like if you don't have a gay person in your family, oh, well, first of all, you do, you just don't know that you do. Or like, you know, oh, you think that it's, you know, there's a teenage, a character who has an abortion. It's like, yeah, yeah, that happens to a whole lot of teenage girls. And in fact, like, I don't know. I just think that like all of the issues, quote unquote issues in the book, are just things that are a part of literally everyone's life. So it didn't seem at all, you know, like to me, I'm like, yeah, that's what it's like to be in a family and to be a person and to be like a human woman also is like to have all of these things, happening simultaneously or over the course of one's life or plus cursing and gay marriage.
You mentioned what it's like to be a woman. And actually one thing I noticed, so the book is very like matriarchal in this way. First of all, you killed off the patriarch, so he's gone. And like at times, I wrote down here, direct animosity to men is expressed.
Yeah, no. And I did like, so I think that just like in, you know, in like 2 to 4 to 10 years, we're going to be reading a million novels that have to sort of tackle and synthesize what we're going through right now. I think the books that are being published right now are all tackling and synthesizing what it feels like to have President Trump, you know, like, and that, like, it turned me into a misandrist, you know, where I'm like, men, ah! like 100%, 100%. And like, I realized that, and I was like, all right, well, that, we're going to go with that. We're going to go with that. I mean, I know I, you know, certainly have felt that way in the last 4 years where you're like, God, like when people post those memes, you know, where it's like, guess which countries are dealing with things well, and it, you know, shows you a picture of like all of the countries that are run by women, you know, and then you look at the problems that we have here, and like, I'm not saying that having a woman president would solve all of those. Obviously they wouldn't, no more than having a black president solved all of the ills in this country. But God, I hate him so much. And he has done so much harm. I think that as I was writing this book, like, it wasn't even, I don't know, it was all still coming, you know, like it wasn't, I hadn't even seen the extent of it. Like, it, so much of it was about my fear of what was going to happen. And then look at, here we are, like worse than we could have imagined. But yes, you're not wrong to point out that part of the book. And I'm like, oops.
Well, that's, I think that's what I mean. Like, I do like that if you did want to, like, I don't even know what beach read means. Like, I'm a person who read The Brothers Karamazov and like War and Peace on the beach. So I'm like, if you read a book on the beach, it's a beach read. But I'm glad it's marketed that way. That's totally great. But like, you could read it just as this like story of this town, but there is so much more here. And you just do such a great job bringing in so many different things. And I have a bazillion more questions, but one thing I really want to talk about is, and you touched on it too, in this way that your family especially sees your multiple selves kind of all at once. And when you live in the same town, you're interacting with people who might still see you as a teenager, even though you're a grown up. And a lot of the book is about time. And that's sort of like, to me, it always feels weird to be like, this is what your book is about. But you, I remember, even though we already knew each other, I wrote you like a fan letter when Modern Lovers came out, because to me, a lot of it was about marriage, and I had just gotten married, and it really like hit me in this certain place in my brain and my heart. And a lot of what I've been thinking about lately, as I read a line in a Zadie Smith essay yesterday where she said, like, I'm done being a young woman. And so I'm like, that part of my life is over. And so I guess I'm at the beginning of like becoming an old woman. But this idea, this tension, I'm getting there, this tension between nostalgia and thinking about being confronted with your own past all the time, and then this sort of like opportunity and chance for do-overs or discoveries or rebirth, and trying to decide if you're at a point where more doors are closed. I feel like for Astrid, so that woman gets hit by a bus at the beginning, and that really sparks this whole thing for her where she's like, it's not too late. I can still do all this stuff. I don't know where my question is. I just want to talk to you about time because right now time is insane.
Yeah.
Time
is insane. And I think that like, oh man. Yeah. I mean, I think that, you know, so during quarantine, I turned 40.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. Thank you. And it feels like it was in April, and it feels like it was 100 years ago. And so I feel like my relationship to time is so strange right now, where it feels both like we're, you know, caught in amber and time isn't moving at all, and that time is moving too quickly, and in this scary way where I'm like, oh my God, it's going to be July in a couple of days. And And then it'll be September, and like, is it going to be safe for my kids to be in school? And like, if school doesn't exist, what is my life? And like, how am I ever going to get back to work? But I think, you know, before the pandemic, and when I wrote the book, I mean, I was coming to it from a really sort of optimistic place, and thinking, like, I think that there are obviously ways that, you know, older women, or not even older women, but women who just aren't young, are treated differently. And there are a lot of women older than I am who have written about that extensively. But I guess the way that I relate to it is that, like, I have always thought of myself as a young person, right? Because heretofore, I had been, right? Like, I was young. I definitely was for many years until really April. And I mean, luckily I'm a novelist, so I get to stay young until I'm like 60, I think. But that's in my life as a novelist. But in my life in the world, I'm not young, which I know for sure because I have a dozen employees who are mostly in their 20s. And boy, oh boy, is that a good and useful way to understand where you are in space. And I mean, you know, I don't know, I don't know if they would feel like flattered by it or irritated by it, but I feel like they teach me so much all the time. Not because they're trying. I mean, sometimes because they're trying to, because I'm like, how does this thing work? I don't understand how this thing works. Please explain it to me. And they're like, okay, grandma. And they explain to me how it works. And then I still don't understand how to like pin a comment on a thing on the thing. You know, it's like, I'm a lost cause. But more than that, it's just been observing how people who are, you know, a generation or two younger than I am operate in the world. And thank God, like, it is so inspiring to be around young people who are so engaged and informed and smart. The kids are all right, and like, they're gonna save us all, basically, is the moral of this particular story.
Well, that's good news. We need some good news.
Yeah.
Well, you said you miss hand selling. Are there a few recommendations you want to make?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Okay. So the book that I finished most recently that I loved so crazily is Luster by Raven Lalani. Have you read it?
Yes. It's so good.
So we have sold a bazillion copies of Sally Rooney books, right? I feel like every woman between the ages of 17 and 50 who walks into this store has bought either one or both of Sally Rooney's novels. And I feel like Luster fits that same zone, where it's like this really smart, hyper-observant young woman interacting with sex and friendship and herself, only she's a Black woman in America, in New York. And like, to me, like, it just couldn't check more boxes for like what I like to read and what I know our customers want to read. Like, everyone is going to love it. Like, it was hilarious. So hilarious.
It's and really also funny.
So dark, like so dark and so, but so funny. Like, on every page, there was some phrase that just made me absolutely cackle. Like, I just think that she is amazing. She is amazing. Like, what a debut. What a debut. I just loved it. That is like, that is the one where I was like, woo, like, just gave me, it just makes me feel so excited. So that's one. The Vanishing Half, Britt Bennett. I mean, it's number one on the bestseller list, so I feel like I don't really need to, like, probably pitch it to people. Like, people are buying it already. But I loved that, too. I love The Mothers, but I feel like this is even better. And I sometimes have a hard time with books that sort of go back and forth in time that way, like the sort of feels both like a historical novel and contemporary novel. But I just think she just did such a beautiful job. Just the characters feel so real. They feel so real. And it's beautiful. And I'm so glad that everyone is loving it and she deserves it. And hooray. So those are my two picks. I mean, I can give you more picks, but those are two.
Do we have another? Do we have another hour?
I mean, I can do this all day.
I miss working in a bookstore. So me too. Like telling people what to read, recommending what to read is one of my favorite things. Thank you so much. It was an absolute delight to talk to you. I love All Adult Fear so much. Thank you so much for this book.
Thank you. It's so nice to talk to you too.
From listening, I think it's obvious how much I enjoyed talking to Emma, and I hope how much I enjoyed reading All Adults Here. As you can hear, I think Emma's work always really hits me somewhere deep, and I want to emphasize what a true pleasure it is to read her books as well. I hope you'll pick up a copy of All Adults Here from your favorite independent bookstore. We've listed some options on the show page at the Literary Arts website, along with the books that Emma recommended. I'm Amanda Bullock, and this has been Long Distance, a podcast project from Literary Arts and the Archive Project. You can find more information about Literary Arts at literary-arts.org and follow us at Literary Arts. Thank you for listening.
All right, that's it for this episode of Long Distance, a podcast series of the Archive Project from Literary Arts. The Archive Project is a retrospective of some of the most engaging talks from the world's best writers from more than 35 years of literary arts in Portland. To hear more from the Archive Project, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Long Distance is edited by Liz Olofsson, with production oversight from Crystal Liguori. Special thanks to the Literary Arts staff, board, and community. This podcast would not be possible without them. Thanks also to the band Emancipator for our theme music. And thanks to all of you for listening. I'm Andrew Proctor, and this has been another edition of the Archive Project from Literary Arts. Join us next time and find your story here.